Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This is The Guardian.
You make the toughest decisions early and then wrangle your way back. Mm. You get to 23, 24, when's the next election? It's going to be early 25. Okay, real wages are growing. Mm. The Reserve Bank will have started cutting interest rates by then.
Yep. Playing you just got to ride it out.
You've got to ride it out and make the best of it as you can. So that's why you've got Chalmers going so hard, the ashen face, the baton as the bad cop, thumping anything he can find.
Hello, lovely people of podcasts. Welcome to the show. You are with Catherine Murphy and you are on Australian Politics. And with me, curiously silent.
What? Who are you looking at? Goodness gracious. We just wanted an introduction. Yeah. Isn't
you just
hard?
Wanted it to be professional.
The Guardian's
to be professional.
Lack of decorum.
I am with Shane Wright, senior economics correspondent for Nine Newspapers, so economic guru, and also, shall we say, just sort of, this could be the understatement of the century, a minor aficionado in the oeuvre of Kate Bush. I think that...
Well, Spotify said I was in the top 0.05% of listeners last year.
So I'm just saying there'll be some economics in the next 30 minutes and some Kate Bush. Also with me in the pod cave, Greg Jericho, lovely Greg Jericho, man of charts and stats and other miscellaneous facts for Guardian Australia, and these days also works for the Australia Institute, the progressive think tank. So I want to start, of course, by thanking Greg for running up that hill.
Running up that hill.
And joining this important conversation today. Don't peek too early. Don't peek too early, boys. So, look, we've gathered here today as we are wont, because today, which I shouldn't actually be calling today, but it's Thursday. If you're interested, we're recording on Thursday. The reason we're here is if you follow politics closely, you will know that on Thursday, the new Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, delivered an economic statement to Parliament. This is his first ministerial statement as Treasurer.
It's the first ministerial statement by any member of the new government.
That's exactly right. It was. Yes, it definitely was. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right.
It's the first since Kate Bush went number one. There you go. See, you opened that door.
I did open that door, yes, after we ran up that hill.
I don't think there was a door open there. I think you just barged on through.
Anyway, back to the...
Right on through to the other side.
Yeah. Back to the economy. Back to the economy. Yes, so anyway, Jim Chalmers delivered a statement to the Parliament updating all of us, voters, onlookers, about the state of the economy, and he delivered some massive signposts to the October budget. Shane, why don't you kick off and tell us, broadly what Jim Chalmers said, just in case the good folks missed it.
Things are tough. Things are going to get tougher. Don't smile. That's pretty much it. Yeah. So we went through, inflation will get to 7.75% by the end of the year, which would be higher since the start of 1990, which was about 5 months after Kate Bush released the album, The Central World.
Thank you.
Just thought I'd... Important to give context.
Perfectly appropriate.
The higher interest rates that the Reserve Bank is using right now is going to lop off at least half a percentage point from growth for this current financial year and next financial year. Also notes net exports is going to drag on growth, as will the slowdown in construction and the supply problems in construction, as anyone who's trying to build a house. May I mention from The Dreaming, Kate Bush sang the song, Get Out of My House. Nothing to do with the Australian building industry right now, but linked.
But thoughts and prayers if you are building a house
right now.
Absolute
thoughts and prayers.
Yes.
And also, like, unemployment around, like, as we know, astonishingly good figures at the moment at 3.5%. Treasury thinking it'll be average around 3.75% this year and then tick up a little bit to 4 and stay around 4. The big one, of course, is wages, that real wages are going backwards.
Yeah.
Big time. Like, actually, this is it. Nominal wages are supposed to go up, but it's just that inflation is going up
faster.
So much faster. So he's actually, the Treasury forecasts actually push back real wage growth by a full year until probably the middle of 2024.
And sort of budget, I mean, obviously that the forecasts impact the budget.
That's the economic
obvious
ones.
Thing. Yes, obvious so thing we, to say.
So he didn't give a lot away on the budget, but said, doom and gloom, those buggers over the other side. Look at this. Yes. But he touched on how the inflation generally and inflation and higher wages growth will probably cost expenditure an extra $30 billion over the next three and a bit years.
And unpack that too for people who don't understand the length.
So say the age pension, which is the largest welfare payment by the federal government, that is actually linked to inflation.
Yes.
And so if inflation picks up, then you have to start paying out more.
Yeah.
And you actually saw, this was one of the weird things, just before the election, the previous government was saying, oh, look, pensions, you're going to have to get, I think it was a 3.5% or 4% increase in the age pension, because, and that shows how good we're going.
Yeah.
No, it was a reflection of inflation.
Exactly.
That's all it was. So you've got those sorts of things. He teased a little bit about what's going on around some of the things that the, as it was capitalised in the speech, the Rorts.
Oh, yes. Yes.
The Rorts audit.
The Rorts audit.
Is going, saying, for instance, and we've heard a bit about this week, about a register for businesses, the cost of which has gone from about $500 million to $1.5 billion, which hadn't been put away in the budget.
I don't want to detain us, but I struggle to get my head around that whole situation.
I know. And it hasn't been explained in great detail.
Well, I'm glad about that. I just wondered whether I was an idiot.
No one should ever accuse you of being an idiot.
It was just one of those things where I just thought, I can't really understand that. Anyway, sorry, Shane, as you were.
And then we got to the rhetoric of, look, we understand, everyone around the country is tightening their belts. We will tighten our belts. But, of course, the belt tightening we won't really see until the October budget.
Yes, exactly. Nicely done. Now, Greg, did any of that sort of
makes sense? No. Shane, can you say it all again, but clearer this time for everybody who was listening?
They fell asleep. They turned on their CD player.
Let us roll. No. Let us roll and fall in green. Greg, any of that surprise you? First question. So anything surprising there, but anything sort of terrify you about that whole situation?
No, not a lot of surprises. And just looking at what other economists, sort of commercial economists for banks and things, everyone seemed to be fairly on board with all the predictions that it was about what they were expecting. Obviously, rising inflation rates, and they are going up fast, as everyone knows, and predicted to keep going up fast. I still think going up, predicted to go up faster than they actually will, but who knows? That's obviously going to hit growth. And notionally, according to these figures, make unemployment go up a bit faster than it would, rather than, say, 3.75%, get up to 4.25%, which is, it's not nothing. But as Shane was saying, the figures that scare the hell out of me are real wages. I did sort of a quick calculation, and by the time we sort of hit rock bottom of this sort of little bit, or before they start turning, we'll be in, you know, June 2023, June into 2024, and at that point, real wages will be back at the levels they were in 2009, 2010. I mean, that's 14 years of real wages growth lost. And the problem with real wages growth, because it's got inflation and it's got two things sort of working together, it takes a long time to get it back. You don't generally have fast real wages growth. It's not something that, one, our economy and the labour market is geared to produce anymore. It's, in fact, it's kind of geared to keep wages growth down. And so even with their figures of, you know, kind of pretty strong 3.75% wages growth.
Well, that would be the fastest since, so that's real.
Definitely since the GST. The GFC, not the GST. Yeah. But even with that growth, by June 2026, which is as far out as Chalmers' figures go, we're still in real wage terms 1.5-2% below where we were before the pandemic came along.
Well, yeah.
I was doing the calculations for tomorrow's story, read in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, that they won't get back from pre-COVID levels till at least 27.
Mm.
27, yep. 28. And you can extrapolate those figures that they've put out, and you go, that's where you end up.
And that's assuming some kind of good wages growth figures.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah, assuming that a whole kind of like, you know, 20 years of past practice is all of a sudden abandoned and all of a sudden.
It's more the last, I think it's more the last 10 years. I think
more 10 than 20.
You get through the GFC and you see the big change.
That's true. That's fair.
Don't give away 20 years.
No, it's not 20. You're right. It's sort of, it is the post GFC thing. That's right. Now, look, I will ask the mug question, the obvious one, given we've set up the idea that none of us are getting a real pay increase for, you know, the terms of our natural lives. Obviously, this new government, the Albanese government, went to the voters and made much of sluggish wages growth, right? Everything's going up except your wages, an oft-repeated campaign talking point. How do you think this goes politically, Shane, when it's, you know, obviously now the message is already being adjusted?
They've been fortunate, in fact, in one way, which is the Fair Work Commission decision, giving 5.2, because over 2022-23, that will be about in line. If these forecasts come to pass, which is 5.25 for 2022-23, the bottom 200,000 people in the country will be on par with inflation.
Yep.
That just leaves 13.4 million other
others.
People going, scratching their heads, going, oops, hold on.
Yep.
So you go, right, there is always a little honeymoon, but I think the honeymoon ends in the budget. I think that's where, like, they'll get some goodwill out of the job summit, because there'll be all this talk about, oh, we can do this from all sides will be saying we can find a way.
Yeah.
But the reality really hits the road. Probably in the next month and a half as the electricity bills start to flow through. Everyone but Canberrans.
Yes.
Canberra has.
We are in the renewables principality.
Yes. The Soviet Socialist Republic of the ACT.
Indeed.
Actually, we'll see a fall in electricity prices, not in gas prices, but in electricity prices.
Yeah.
So that will start coming through. There will be the complaints from people as they see their new yearly rates.
Yes.
Payments.
Yes.
Plus the every bank lifting their mortgage rates. That starts to sting. So you get to the budget. And there'll be a little bit of pent-up anger, particularly even with the end of the fuel excise discount.
Well, I think we've discussed this before. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like I honestly cannot wrap my mind around the government. I mean, I know the government has to, because, you know, you can't keep doing this, but it's sort of like, God, my brain explodes when I think about the political reality of them actually doing it. But what do you think, Greg? Interestingly, I don't know if you guys saw it, but in our Guardian Essential this week, there was sort of, we asked a bunch of questions about how do you think the government's doing on a range of fronts? And look, they weren't being smashed or eviscerated, but certainly where the negative feedback was from the voters was cost of living, right?
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. So what do you reckon about the politics of it, Greg?
Politics is pretty awful. In some ways, the politics is worse with inflation than when you've got rising unemployment, because with rising unemployment, you can think about stimulus measures and you can lower interest rates. But killing inflation, there's not a lot of nice ways to do it.
It's all sort of blunt trauma, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think also in terms of the politics, given the, I think the almost overriding message about Scott Morrison that really hurt him was the whole don't hold a hose kind of narrative,
yeah.
That sort of sense of, yeah. You know, it's someone else's problem, which means Labor can't really say that. You know, I think they've pretty much already hit the wall of we've only been in office
nine weeks. That was the line today.
They're still sort of saying, and it's like, I think that's getting tired. I think that was fine right up until this week. You're back at Parliament now. Sorry, you're in charge. And as annoying as that is, and perhaps unfair, because certainly they didn't do anything to create this inflation problem. You wanted the office.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah,
and I think certainly by the time October comes around and the budget, it's all on you. I think looking further on, how is this all going to play out with wages growth? I think what they're going to have to think about is sort of non-wages aspects of household income and what can be done there. And that might – and sort of, you know, things like lowering childcare prices actually also has an impact on inflation sort of bizarrely. So I think that might be where there is some focus, but Christ,
difficult.
I don't sort of envy them. Right,
what do you guys think about because obviously, you know, we saw an interesting case study over the last couple of weeks where obviously the government attempted to allow pandemic leave payments to lapse. Now, that was obviously budget related, right? Like Jim Chalmers, Katie Gallagher, the whole expenditure review committee process is absolutely underway and rolling. They had factored in, you know, because Scott Morrison obviously said, here's the end date. Now the government has, well, for correct reasons, public health reasons, has said, oh, no, actually we're extending until September. So that's another bit of expenditure that they hadn't factored in, and, you know, it's big dollars. Do we think that with all of these difficulties that Labor's policy agenda is imperiled to the extent that, you know, you've got the events problem, right? We're like, oh, my God, we've got to spend, you know, $11 billion on this thing. Therefore, you know, what happens to their election promises when you're getting into that territory where, you know, it's sort of, you know, Greg's making the point, you wouldn't want to be them. Well, it is the worst of all worlds to the extent that more spending will hit the budget. You know, the outlook isn't as good. And it sort of makes the whole debt and deficit thing maybe hover around in some parallel universe as well, which is difficult for them. What do you reckon, Shane?
I'm not sure they're in trouble yet because their agenda was relatively small.
Yeah.
The Liberal Party's been trying to make a point about all this extra spending, and for the life of me, I haven't quite worked out why they're going down this path because it was so – the differences between the two were very small. And so, right, if you're going to spend money on childcare, well, I'm not sure that's going to lose you many votes at all. And then much of the other stuff, like there's some of it's off budget, which, again, won't hit the budget bottom line. So agenda in what they took in that space isn't off the rails by any stretch of the imagination yet. I keep coming back to the thought that I had for a long time, especially about in amongst the gallery, was that the political nous of Anthony Albanese had been underestimated, because this guy has been around a very long time and you can't survive in the New South Wales Labor Party for a long time without having some sort of ability.
In the minority faction.
Yes, and which he has done. And so, like, you know that they're thinking, right, this is a 3-year, and he has talked about a 6-year agenda at least. So you make the toughest decisions early and then wrangle your way back.
Mm.
And if you're looking, say, at these economic forecasts, you get to 23, 24, when's the next election? It's going to be early 25. Okay, real wages are growing. The Reserve Bank will have started cutting interest rates by then.
Yep.
So you're playing
out. You've just got to ride it out.
You've got to ride it out and make the best of it as you can. So that's why you've got Chalmers going so hard with the ashen face, the baton as the bad cop thumping anything he can find.
Mm.
So you can see that playing out. That's the political rhetoric going into the economic rhetoric. But again, it still comes to whether they can land everything on the economic side of things they can. And so I actually think the audit of waste and
thoughts
then becomes something that they'll use as a cudgel.
Yeah, to keep the Liberal Party. Keep finding their opponents.
You should never waste a crisis, and this is a crisis. And they're smart enough to know that if there are some things that they would like to change, maybe stationary tax cuts.
Yes.
See, I disagree. I just don't think you can get rid of the, like, they are 2024.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still a long way off.
Push
them back. And I think there'd be, Peter Dutton would be up talking about LAW law tax cuts very quickly.
Yeah.
And killed Keating.
Yeah.
Killed a budget.
Yeah.
Killed
Keating. Well, I just think, I've always thought that if they're going to do it, they should.
And a carbon tax that never existed killed Julia.
No, I don't.
I don't know.
I agree with your position intellectually.
When we've got inflation going and everyone going, what, inflation's going, you're putting more petrol on the fire, I think, of course Dutton's going to go LAW and it killed Keating, but it killed Keating at the end of his, when he was...
Yeah, but that...
He was
that,
dead.
And, well, this is a really good... Thank you for leading me to this ledge, because I just want us to pause.
Jump off.
Well, no, we definitely don't jump off until we finish the podcast, guys.
Fair enough.
No, I just... it is interesting, this sort of, you know, we can see... as we've mapped out, right, in just this last couple of minutes, right, that there is a way to ride out the storm. And as Greg says, you never waste a crisis. That's absolutely true. I guess the question I've got is whether or not, though, voters are patient in the sense of, look, things are going to be rough, guys, right? That's the bad news that we're sharing with you. Things are going to be rough probably for, 6-12 months, really. Mm. Like, that's going to be the worst of it, right? None of us are going to enjoy this period. It's sort of, I don't know, it's sort of a question I can't answer in my mind about whether or not people will look at these conditions, think, you inherited most of this. If they don't make an absolute, absolutely diabolical cock-up of the whole business, whether people just have the patience themselves to ride it out and not necessarily punish the government of the day. What do you reckon? I mean, we're guessing, obviously.
Well, we are. And there is a reason that there's only been one term government.
Yeah.
And we have to go back to poor old Jim Scullin getting elected 2 weeks out from the great crash that's precipitated the Great Depression. So, I take your point as to that the short-termism of voters has accelerated.
Yeah. People seem less patient to me.
Well, we can see it with people reading our copy online, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't grab them, like, they're not going to plough through 200 or 300 of the most perfect words if they... Mm. Yeah.
Ever composed.
Yeah, yes. That's right. Mm. And, you are Shakespearean in your approach to copy, Catherine. that's what you end up with. Like, the demand for immediacy.
Yes. I guess that's the question I've got in my mind.
Like, we've got people fighting over $11 lettuces in aisles at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, whether, and we saw it during the COVID, people fighting over bloody toilet rolls.
Yeah.
Like,
when things get bad, it's sort of, but anyway, but
cats and dogs living together.
Well, COVID did demonstrate also the resilience of the population in the end. I mean, there was lots of scary business, but it did represent the resilience. It's an unanswered question in my mind. How patient are we?
I mean, they might be impatient, but they also still have to look at the alternative, and I don't think the alternative is in a fit state at this point in time. Maybe they'll get there, but they...
I think they know how to do a cost of living campaign, these people.
Yeah, but
what's a cost of living campaign in 3 years' time?
Yeah, exactly.
They certainly, I missed question time today, but they seem to be focusing more on unions at the moment.
Yeah, no, that, no,
so
well,
I don't know if there is much strategy going on.
Yeah, no, that's
and,
all true.
And I think, people might get impatient, but I'm not, certainly we've seen it at state government levels, but But that's when things are really, there has been perhaps a real lot of broken promises.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why, I mean, I don't think they will dump the stage three tax cuts, even though I would if I was, well, I would push them back. But that's why I'm not in politics and I'm in a think tank telling them to dump the stage three tax cuts.
And we're in a podcast.
But I just think 3 years, unless things are not turning around and things are going back. And also, as usual, there's been scandals or they don't seem like they have a clue.
Yeah, it's all predicated on confidence.
I always go back to first term of the Rudd government. They kicked out Cameron Rudd and they still got over the line just.
Mm. Yeah.
So you really have to stuff up. And Labor tried to stuff up.
Oh, they did everything they could.
And they still, despite themselves, got over the line.
They did everything they could to kick themselves in the head repeatedly. Anyway, I just want to ask you both about the bank. The bank, Capital Reserve. Well, I know Shane will be hot to trot on this, and I imagine you will have views too, Greg, this.
You do know it's called the Wright Review.
The Wright Review?
The Wright Review.
Because you're responsible.
Yes.
Because of that excellent series, which we've spoken about. If you're a regular, you'll know. We've actually, we've given, you know, Shane more than high five for his excellent series on the Reserve Bank. If you haven't looked at that, you should chase it down. It's easy to chase down. But anyway, various things going on. Kids, we've got rising rates, obviously, still, and we have this review, the Wright Review. There's been quite a lot of chatter over the last couple of weeks about a few things, about, you know, should we have this review when the bank has a very serious job to do? Right, I've seen that kind of out and about.
Yeah, rubbish.
Well, I agree. let's not talk
about climate change after a bushfire, right?
No, I know. But let's kick the ball around a bit, okay? All right, I've seen that view expressed. I've seen a fair bit of tut-tutting about the Prime Minister, who I think it was last week. Time's a bit elastic. But during an interview with Neil Mitchell in Melbourne, did something quite unusual. He reflected on what the bank perhaps should or shouldn't be thinking about, which prime ministers generally don't do. So that's going on. Then we've got this review itself. Kick off, Shane. What do you make of all of those little moving parts?
The response to Albanese saying don't overreach, I find interesting because outside of this country, politicians, prime ministers do reflect on monetary policy.
We've
dug ourselves into this, the Reserve Bank, the high priests of Martin Place, like we bow down to their intellect, but sometimes they're just naughty boys.
Mm.
There is
the independence issue.
There is the independence thing, but no one's saying that Chalmers is about to rock up and knock
drag
off Philo
out of there
and say, everybody out, I'm bringing Sally McManus and the rest of the ACTU in to run monetary policy. Mm. No, we haven't got to that point. But I find that interesting, just the international context and the fact that we in this country have really moved away from having any criticism of what the Reserve Bank does from our political leaders. But you get out and you can see it when Chalmers announced it, all these TV reporters saying, oh, you're doing, is this because the Reserve Bank stuffed up by lifting interest rates? Mm. The thing is, the review is not because of what they've been doing the last 6 months. It was what they were doing before COVID.
Well, but also, I mean, the context for the review surely is, you know, we as Gen X tragics, the three of us, we had the 80s fashion and the dragster bikes and, you know, so we were sort of from the inflation era, the three of us. We've spent a lot of time on this podcast in this configuration battling with the sort of cognitive dissonance of the low inflation environment, which we all struggled to process.
Now we're feeling more comfortable.
Now it's back to, you know, very familiar territory. But I'm sort of raving about that to make a point. It's sort of like, it's not only the sort of individual, you know, decision making that, as Shane says, stretches far beyond whether or not you increase rates in order to deal with inflation. It's the whole context around it. It's a whole set of decisions. And it's also a whole sort of moving in the, you know, sort of the, whatever the equivalent of economic tectonic plates has been over the last 20 years. Like, there's a whole bunch of rules that we certainly grew up with, the three of us, for how economies work that, you know, really haven't seemed to work that well, really, over the last sort of since the post-GFC period.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just putting that out there as a bit of context. So, Greg, what do you think about the bank, the review, whether or not Prime Ministers should reflect? Where do you kind of land on that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly right. We come from a different environment, so different. I remember
we're not from around here.
Getting Kate Bush's "Running Up That Hill" was on a song that I got on a tape from my sister in 1986.
Yeah, obviously.
Yes,
for Christmas, a tape.
So you didn't record it off the radio
played? No, it was on a tape with other...
That's how you do it.
That was my caper.
1986 yeah. Out now with other classics from Kids in the Kitchen.
God, yes, a classic of the compilation genre. Yes.
So we certainly come from an environment where inflation was just, you know, 6-7% inflation. Yeah. Well, that's what it is.
Yes.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Shane's right. There's suddenly... In the 90s, there was the Reserve Bank are lords and masters, and we don't reflect on them, and they're always right. And I wonder if Albanese's sort of little comment, and it was nothing major, but it was sort of what you'd expect someone to sort of be suggesting about interest rates, not going too hard, be careful. If that is a little sight into the realisation that if you're reviewing an organisation and you've got a lot of problems with the economy, it's always good to find a bad guy. And the Reserve Bank, and perhaps even if they want to get really into it, Philip Lowe, who's probably going to be ending up anyway next year, there's no sort of suggestion his term is going to be extended. Yeah, you've got a full guy and...
But you've got a full board.
Yeah, exactly.
Full board.
Well...
And, you know, the reality is...
Don't get me started on the board.
Yeah.
No. Exactly. Get me started on the board.
I think this... What Shane's saying is right. The problem with the Reserve Bank is not that they're raising interest rates now to keep inflation down. It's that they kept interest rates flat while... Inflation was well below 2% for, 5 years or something like that, and unemployment was stuck, of 6% around there. So but also what is a big problem, and one that I've seen sort of mentioned around the traps, is also the commentary in the response to the pandemic that we're going to keep interest rates where they are basically till 2024, and that fueled... a huge housing boom, prices coupled with the home builder program, and then suddenly it's, did I say till 2040? I meant it now. And, now whether or not that's fair, but I think it could be a very politically smart way to play it perhaps. Right. There are dangers, but, I think people don't like interest rates going up, and there's one person or one board in charge of that, and you can say you guys don't really know what you're doing.
Well, you put it this way, if a government stuffs up every 3 years, people can cast their view.
Yeah.
The Reserve Bank, no. And there is a reason every central bank has gone down this path. We've got to take the interest rates out of the hands of politicians because they were being pro-cyclical with their movements and it was creating all sorts of economic problems.
Yeah.
But... Yes, Phil Lowe's at the top of the board, but the board appointed, every person on that board has been appointed by either Scott Morrison or Josh Frydenberg. If it was a private company, the board would be, there'd be demands for the board to go because they haven't hit the target.
Yes.
For a long time, either the low or upside. So I think this will be one of the interesting discussions is in the review because the Australian board is so unusual. Mm. It is a Cyndi Lauper, she's so unusual sort of board because no other central bank has a board which is plucked from amateurs. Here's your job, run the economy through monetary policy.
Mm.
And this is an idea that Ted Theodore, up until this year, the only treasurer to lose his seat in an election, he came up with that idea in the 30s and it was picked up a few years later, and that's how we've ended up with this situation.
Yeah,
But it is so very much unusual. And yet Lowe defends the input of the business people who are on the board, and that, of course, that's what he should be doing. But you've got to stand back and say, right, is it the best way to have monetary policy? There's two big economic policy levers in this country, fiscal and monetary. Leave it to a bunch of people who once a month get around. They're not trained in this space. They listen to they're supposed to give an insight to what's going on, but God, there's a lot of other organisations and people who can give you insights into what's going on in the economy locally, nationally, internationally. Yeah, I think that this will be one of the interesting bits, and you can see where Chalmers is already thinking, saying, right, I've extended the term of Mark Barnaba by 12 months. Wendy Craik's term comes up 2 months after that, and then Phil Lowe's seven-year term ends in September. So, and the report will come in March.
Yeah.
So he's given himself a chance to reorganise the board. And I think politically having a fight in Parliament would be extraordinary about him, say Chalmers comes in and says, right, we're going to change the way the entire board's carved up. That would be something that we haven't seen, like an absolute fight, I think, would ensue.
Yeah, well, we'll be back to that sort of, you know, redrawing of economic institutions, you know, sort of. Anyway, it's really interesting. And we will gather and talk more about this, obviously, as the review progresses and we get closer. I feel as though we have to end on the question.
Why did Running Up the Hill get to number one, and is that the worst thing to happen
actually,
this year?
Actually, we've been lighter than I thought
it's been a good year, but no.
look, this year Kate Bush was up for the US Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Where she, again, did not get selected, but the person who covered Kate Bush, Pat Benatar, did.
Wow.
Pat Benatar on the album in which she released to us Hit Me With Your Best Shot, breakthrough single, included
Love Is a Battlefield. A
couple of years later, but a great, tremendous song. Love Is a Battlefield is about 3-4 years later.
Oh, God.
But I could see you in those tied, ripped dresses of that period.
I had the whole wardrobe, yes.
But Pat Benatar did a cover version of Wuthering Heights. It is
terrible.
Wild.
Terrible? It's got to be terrible.
It's no Placebo cover of Running Up That Hill, which is a really
very good.
It's a very good cover version.
Yes.
Yes.
No, but anyway, it wasn't Kate Bush, although we've upped the quotient. Sorry, gents.
No.
I mean, we should end on a high, really, but we will, I suspect. Well, there's an answer. Recession? Yes. No.
Oh, jeez.
Come on. Put it on the line.
Go on, Greg. Just to set this up better, I'm sorry, because I didn't really set that up. Look, there is discussion, there is a conversation around the world, if you're not following economics closely, about, you know, whether America is already in a shallow recession, what might happen about China. There's all bad business happening in the global economy, headwinds, et cetera. Obviously, in this economic statement that we have referenced in this episode, the growth figures were revised down, obviously.
But still above 3%.
Still above 3%. Yeah. So anyway, so look, you know, recession, it's like, you know, what do you reckon?
Well, I actually wrote about this, a column on this very subject a couple of weeks back.
So just condense it to one or two words, will you?
Guardian Australia.
No. I opened the article with the sage words of Reverend Lovejoy of Long Story No with an if, and short story yes with a but.
There he goes, rock and all.
Kind of think, look, the risk is higher than it has been outside of the pandemic, which is just a sort of absurd thing. But it's higher than it has been since the GFC, but one would hope that, and I think the real risk here is the Reserve Bank, that they are
just the overreach, quote unquote.
I don't think Labor are going to be slamming on the austerity brakes.
Seems unlikely.
It'd just be silly, and it's not really in their way of thinking of things. Mm. But if the Reserve Bank follows what the market is saying and keeps hiking interest rates up to the cash rate up to over 3.5%, I think it's a very real chance of a significant slowdown. And especially given what's happening in America, the risks are there, but I think we should avoid it.
Yeah, that.
I'm just trying to be positive.
No. This is a failure of me. This is a failure of me.
Positive with the saddest looking face.
We should have. I always try and end on a happy note. And anyway, here we are in the recession. Sorry about that.
Well, I'm going to say, as Kate would say, I hold a cup of wisdom, but there is nothing within. This could be the definition of this whole podcast, I tell you.
So you're not going there. You're not saying one way or the other.
No, no, I don't think. I think it's really difficult for Australia to have a recession. Especially once, say, the borders are open now and you're starting to see more people coming in.
Yes.
Australia has used population growth as a real buffer against recession for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
When you're exporting so much in the way of dirt, as we do very well
on
that.
It's our business.
It's really difficult. I think, 60% of the economy is consumers. Consumers are still spending.
Yeah.
They haven't withdrawn. And, the RBA might hit, I don't think they'll get to 3.6. But the Reserve Bank, and I got angry with people, some TV journalists going, oh, the Reserve Bank doesn't know what it's going to do. And I said, yeah, I think the RBA really doesn't want to drive the country into recession.
I think
that's not their long-term plan.
I think they
how Philip Lowe wants to leave the chair.
Yeah, as a
and go out on a high.
See you later.
Yeah. Go out on a high.
I think that you're right there. Mining is, I mean, Australia's economy is so wacky, really. I mean, mining is going mad, and you look at the profits and everything. Mining profits they're just making money hand over fist. I think the issue there, if we're talking just GDP, no.
Hmm.
But as I sort of, with my labour market sort of policy director hat on, you know, when real wages are going to go down nearly 4% from peaks, is that not a good enough sort of definition of what a recession is for a lot of people?
Well, and I'm more worried about the real
wages not turning like,
yeah,
Chalmers is saying that they will, then it's going into recession. Yeah. That's my bigger fear.
Okay. Well, beautifully put. And thank you to you both because it's a really busy day, Thursday, that we're recording. So I appreciate both of your time. I appreciate all you good folks for listening and getting in touch.
Did you ever get called Kathy?
Oh, God, no. No.
Kathy.
Absolutely.
Catherine Earnshaw.
Well, no, actually.
Wuthering Heights.
Yes.
Kate Bush.
No,
it
no.
all comes back to Kate.
Actually.
See?
Actually.
Or Kate.
Oh, no, that's a whole other podcast.
No, Kate. Anyway. No, Kate Murphy.
No, Kate.
No, no, Kate was fine, but I had a visceral dislike to Kathy. Only my beloved Nan insisted on calling me Kathy, but she was the only person who got away with it. I don't know why, but I still have a slightly visceral reaction to it. Anyway, it's weird. Anyway, as we all were, thank you to you wonderful people for listening and sharing and getting in touch with all of us on social media after these episodes. We really enjoy it, with musical references and or other thoughts. Thank you to Alison Chan, who's producing us this week. Thank you to Miles Martignoni, who's the EP of this show. We will be back next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.